Hi. Good morning. Hi, I'm Tom Limicelli, and I'll be talking about operational excellence in April Fool's pranks. On Tuesday, yesterday, the conference chairs came up to me and said that there was a cancellation, and they asked if I would substitute. And I said, well, I'd have to look at the slides. I don't know a lot about networking. And they said, no, Tom, you don't have to present the person's slides. I said, oh, good, because that would be a lot more difficult. No, they said you can do your talk from the SRE con last March, and I said, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. Now, some of the jokes might not totally work because this talk was given the Friday before April Fool's Day, and I'm talking about April Fool's Day, but I think it's going to work. And also, just as a side note, as a substitute talk, I just want to say that that means that, by definition, all the other talks in the parallel tracks are, by definition, better. So please, you really don't need to be here. Let's take a look. Kafka's pretty cool. You could be there. Branson's giving a talk on how to give effective training. He's a longtime Lisa attendee, that's good. How many people here, did you know that the web version has a grid? How many people just learned that? Yeah, okay, yeah, well, you got like 3 more hours of the conference, so good for you. Now, I did mention that I gave this talk already at SREcon, and it's up on YouTube, and as an SRE, I'm all about automating things, so I think I'm just gonna play the video. And then I'll do question and answer. I have to give the talk. Man, that's so much more difficult. Okay. Well, so there is one thing I'm going to do. I have a copy of this book. I'm going to give away a copy of this book at the end of the talk. It's The Practice of Cloud System Administration. Comes with a free Ziploc bag. You don't get that with the SRE books, let me tell you. I'm going to pick a random date throughout the year, and whoever has the closest birthday to that will get this book. So that's at least some incentive to stick around for this talk that is not as good as all the other talks during this time slot. I assume they'll cut all that out in the video that they're making for this. So let's pretend we'll start in 3, 2, 1. Hi. Thank you. I'm Tom Limicelli, and I'll be talking about operational excellence in April Fool's pranks. Let's just begin. The year was 2015. The date, April 1st. At 10:23 UTC, StackOverflow.com enabled an April Fool's prank called Stack Egg. It was a simple Tamagotchi-like game that appeared in the upper right corner of the website, and though it had been tested, we didn't account for the additional network activity it would generate on the load balancers. So, about 3 hours later, the load balancers were overloaded, making the entire site and all of our web properties unusable. The prank had essentially created a self-inflicted denial of service attack. 3 minutes later, the engineers involved went to a control panel and calmly disabled the feature. About a half an hour later, the site was entirely back to normal. In the next hour, the problem was diagnosed, fixed, new code was pushed into production, and the prank was saved. Was Stack Overflow lucky that the engineers had designed the prank in a way that it could be easily disabled? No, it wasn't luck. It was all in the playbook for, bum, 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 operational excellence in April Fool's pranks. Yay, thunderous applause, woo! Okay, so, as I said before, I'm Tom Limicelli. A little bit about myself. I'm the manager of the SRE team at StackOverflow.com. Who here has heard of Stack Overflow? 1, 2, 3. Okay, some of you. Excellent. Good. I've been a sysadmin for way too long. I was at Google for a while, Bell Labs for a while, some other small and big companies. I blog, I tweet, I have a 3 times a year column in ACMQ magazine. Now, I've been coming to Usenix conferences for, I believe this is my 29th year, and I've noticed that all Usenix talks have two things in common. First, they have a slide like this. I call this the credibility slide, which I need because I really have no credibility. But actually, I do have some credibility in as far as April Fool's jokes. In 2007, Peter Salas and I published all the IETF April Fool's RFCs in one book. Peter Salas, some of you might know, he was actually the first president of Usenix. And now you might be wondering, why would we publish a book on April of data that is, you could FTP this, or, well, HTTP it really easily, for free. Why would we publish a book? Well, the idea was, well, first, we did add some commentary. That's nice. But also, fundamentally, it was just a boondoggle, because I wanted a coffee table book that I could put out there with all the internet RFCs. Now, they say that if a joke needs to be explained, it's not funny, and that would make this the least funny book ever published. We did include a bunch of commentary. Books, you know, they sell pretty well at the beginning and then taper off. I just want to prove what a big success this book was. This is my actual royalty check from this year, $1.81. You know you're working with a big publisher when the royalty check is handwritten. So two things in every Usenix presentation, the credibility section and then the overview slide. So here's an overview of this talk. I'm going to talk about something, then I'm going to talk about not that thing, then I got a top five list, and then the grand finale got a three-part big ending. Okay, so everybody ready? Let's go. Okay, oh, by the way, you're here, in case you weren't sure. So let's talk about something. Let's talk about what makes an April Fool's prank funny. Well, I believe it has to have two things. It has to be topical, has to be absurdist. So let's drill down on that. Topical, that means, pertaining to or dealing with matters of current or local interest. If your company is doing a April Fool's prank on their website, and it's, you know, related to, you know, Van Halen, that's not going to be super funny because they haven't been relevant for decades. You want to keep it relevant. Also, it should be absurdist. Absurdist is, it's not just silly. It's not being silly for silly's sake. Absurdism acts as a crucible that burns away all lies to get to the truth. So if you look at the early works of Steve Martin, you think, oh, he's just being silly. But then you walk away and you say, oh my God, no, he was being absurdist. What he said, if you look through it, kind of read between the lines, he was talking about some deep, deep truths. And then the third thing that makes something funny is surprise. The audience should get this sudden feeling of astonishment, right? Okay, so let's drill down. Let's give an example. Let me tell you the mustache story. This story takes place around 2010, back when I was working at Google. At the time, I don't know about you, but whenever I get a phone call and the caller ID says it's my boss, I'm like in a total panic, right? And so one day I'm sitting in my desk and I get this call, and it's my boss, and he says, join this conference call. And I'm like, I'm in trouble, right? But no, it turns out the managers in my division were having a conference call to brainstorm what they should do for April Fool's Day that year, what internal prank. Now, there is nothing less funny than a bunch of managers brainstorming to come up with a joke, right? And at the time, I was only half a manager, so I guess they thought I'd have something that was half funny. So I said, okay, tell me what you got so far. And they summarized it, this, and I'm like, oh my God, these are awful. And they were awful because they weren't topical, absurdist, and no element of surprise. So I thought, well, what's topical? Well, in 2010, face recognition was just becoming cheap enough that it was starting to be commonplace, and that was causing a lot of commentary. And I thought, oh, didn't we just buy a face recognition company? And I said, you would think that we would be able to accurately place a mustache on the face of everyone in the corporate directory, right? That would be a good April Fool's prank for our internal stuff. And it turns out someone on the phone call sat down the hallway from the people of the acquisition. Long story short, you know, not actual photos, but, you know, we were able to put this together. And for 24 hours, everyone inside Google saw mustaches on their internal corporate directory. Topical, absurdist, surprise. In 2017, Stack Overflow realized that two-factor was becoming very widespread, and customers were starting to see it for the first time in many places. So Stack Overflow released this video on April Fool's Day. I'll just play the first minute. Or maybe not. No, can we try that? Is it on my end or your end? No, that's no here. We did do a rehearsal, I assure you.
And then no, actually go there. That should be one. Try it again.
Where's my mouse? Oh, there we go.
At Stack Overflow, we help a monthly audience of 40 million...
Here, I'm going to turn it up.
Try it again.
See, I'll pause for a second to let the video editor remove this.
At Stack Overflow, we help a monthly audience of 40 million developers get answers to their questions, find jobs, and solve problems. But that success, in turn, has made us a target. Attacks on our security spurred us into action. We had to adapt. We had to get better. We're excited to present the latest evolution in computer security. Dance Dance Authentication. We built the DDA protocol.
So, we're very proud of that video. So, there we go. Yeah, so it was topical. Two-factor was becoming very commonplace in the consumer market. It was absurdist because we all know that security improvements often, you know, reduce usability and can be annoying. And it had an element of surprise. Who knew that Matt Sherman could dance? Okay, so that's what makes a joke funny. What makes an April Fool's prank not funny? Well, you don't want to hurt people, you don't want to punch down, and inside jokes don't play well to a large audience. So let's drill down on this. So hurting people, do not have your April Fool's prank cause real harm. Remember Google's drop the mic prank where in Gmail you could send a reply and drop the mic, which would then block all future emails from that person? Like, that was not, I'm not sure what the humor in that was. And you know who really didn't find that funny? The funeral director who couldn't get responses from a customer. Yeah, Google that. You'll find a lot of articles about that. Punching down. You don't want to punch down. Punching up means making fun of people that are powerful. Punching down is making fun of the downtrodden or powerless. And this is actually why racist and homophobic and sexist jokes are inherently not funny, because they are inherently punching down. Do mock people of power, unless your CEO doesn't have a sense of humor. And inside jokes, I often see many corporate April Fool's jokes fail because, you know, it assumed that their large customer base knows that Larry in accounting really dislikes World of Warcraft. Like, why would they know that? So, okay. So now you know what makes things funny and not funny. Let's go with the top five best practices for your April Fool's pranks. Now, website April Fool's pranks are a high-stakes launch, right? I mean, if you mess it up, it's not like you just relaunch tomorrow because it's not April Fool's Day anymore. So here are some of the things you can do. This is the technical portion of the talk. So item number one, feature flags. You want to have the April Fool's prank set up in a way that you can disable it by changing a flag or a setting in your software. That makes it easy to turn on and off. It also means for months beforehand, you can turn it on in the development environment but off in production, right? Also, if your April Fool's prank causes some kind of DDoS attack on yourself, like, oh, I don't know, where would that happen? You can easily turn it off very quickly. In fact, you can make turning it on and off something that, say, marketing can do if they have access to a control panel, as opposed to if the way you launch your April Fool's prank is by shipping code into production. Well, that means that your SREs have to be awake at, you know, midnight UTC, which would suck, depending on where you live in the world. And it also means think about it. If you were launching new code to enable this, well, how do you disable it? Well, what if your launch mechanisms are part of what's overloaded? Then that's just a bad situation. Also, what if you launch and many hours later there's a problem and during that time other features have launched? Well, do you revert back and lose lots of changes or what? It's so much better to just have a feature flag. The next thing is you need to load test your April Fool's prank. You need to make sure that it is as performant as you expect, that you have the capacity that you expect. Load testing is the flossing of our industry, right? Like, everyone knows you should floss. Everyone says that they floss, but no one really flosses. How many people here flossed this week? Okay, these are the liars of the group, right? Yeah, right. Okay, who flossed 7 out of the last 7 days? Is your manager here to see that you just lie in front of all these people? Oh, my God. So, you know, the reason most people don't do load testing is because it's difficult and boring and it's not sexy. At the enterprise, you don't load test because you're small and, you know, you probably don't need it, maybe, if you're lucky. If you're a startup, you often don't load test because, you know, when you start, you have 0 users and we have enough load for that. And then if you're growing at, like, 10,000 users a week, then, you know, you have that nice, slow, organic growth and you could just stay ahead of the curve just by, you know, monitoring stuff. So everyone has an excuse to not load balance, but you really to load test, but everyone needs to load test, like flossing. Okay, not flossing. I hate flossing, but okay. Number 3, dark launches. So if you're a really large site, actually you can't load test. If you have 1 billion users, you can't build a test environment to do load testing and generate, you know, that much load. So you can try to do fractional load testing, which is better than nothing but isn't perfect. There's something that's much better called dark launches. And this comes from the term, I don't know if the term was invented at Facebook, but definitely the concept was popularized in a talk that Facebook gave at a different conference, you know, one that's not good as Lisa, many years ago, where they said, when they launched Facebook Messenger, they knew that instantly they were going to have hundreds of millions of users on, you know, on day one. Like during the press conference when they announced this, they were going to go from 0 users to hundreds of millions. How the heck can they do load testing for that situation? Well, they couldn't. So 6 months before the launch, they put a little bit of JavaScript code in everyone's browser that was, you know, when you were viewing Facebook, you were also beta testing their Messenger protocol, and you were sending little test messages that were simulating the use of Messenger, and they ramped up what percentage of users had this JavaScript enabled, and so they can find and fix all the performance problems before the actual launch. Very, very smart. Lots of companies have done stuff like this. For example, before launching IPv6, Google put in on the front page of the search, they put some JavaScript that it did two things. It loaded 2 zero-pixel images. One was loaded from a URL that had both an A record and a quad A record, which obviously that should work, right? Like, there's no way that couldn't work, right? But if it failed, it sent back telemetry to Google, and they did identify some ISPs that were having weird problems that needed to be fixed. And they also loaded another image from a URL that only had quad A records, and that gave them telemetry to know, like, how many people are already, you know, up and using IPv6. This was really important because Google and a number of other companies that year were arranging, they called it World IPv6 Day, a day that a lot of different websites were going to enable IPv6 all at the same time. It's going to get a lot of media, a lot of press. And could you imagine if the press that they got was that they all turned this on and there were problems? I mean, that would have set back IPv6 deployment for ages, and, like, we wouldn't all be using it today. Yeah. Some bad examples are Stack Egg, as I mentioned in the intro. But also, you know, when Apple launched the iPhone 6 and the Apple Watch, if you watch the live stream, they had a new feature in the live stream that broadcast where they had real-time updates. And the real-time updates during the live stream overloaded the system. And if you were trying to watch the live stream, you just got, like, nothing worked, and it was awful. And they got a lot of bad press about this. They could have done some pre-testing, but they didn't. Try Googling about that. You won't find it. They have really good reputation management. But at the time, they got some bad press. Item number 4, involve all the silos. You do not want your April Fool's prank to be something that only you know about. You need to include marketing, especially since they should be doing a press release that's in on the joke. And your PR staff has to be involved. Your sales staff has to be involved because customers are going to ask questions. Engineering obviously needs to be involved, but not just your engineering team. All of engineering should understand what's going on so there's no surprises. Your executives need to be involved. You really want executive sign-off on any prank that you're doing. And customer support absolutely needs to know because they might get customer complaints. With the mustache story, all of the help desks inside Google were trained on what to do if someone complained about seeing a mustache on their internal, you know, profile page, and they were given a mechanism to turn it off for specific people. Lastly, number 5, perform a project retrospective. Retrospectives, also known as learning reviews or post-mortems or post-mortems or post-mortems. Postmortem is an exercise where you bring everyone involved together and you discuss what happened, what went well, what could have gone better, but most importantly, you discuss what did we learn from this. And you want to produce a document, an artifact that everyone can read. And really, the focus is on learning, because if things went well, you want to learn why did it go well so that you can repeat those good things. And if things went sideways, there's opportunities to learn here. And I now actually, it's not that I look forward to outages at Stack Overflow, but I know that from every outage, I get kind of excited because I know we're going to learn something. You know, you can't expect there to be a perfect website. There's no such thing as 100% uptime. So if you're going to have outages, you might as well make the best of them. So now every outage, instead of being like a bad thing, every outage makes the whole company smarter. That's pretty cool. And that wouldn't happen if just the one person involved, like, learned their lesson and said, well, I'll never do that again, right? No, instead, you want to share that knowledge. A couple years ago, I sent out the postmortem document to the whole company at Stack Overflow. I had written a postmortem document, sent it out to the whole company, and someone clicked reply all, and it said, I don't know about anyone else, but I really like getting these postmortem reports. Not only is it nice to know what happened, but it's great to see how you guys handled it in the moment and how you plan to prevent these events going forward. Really neato. Thanks for the great work. I am so proud to work at a company where when we have an outage, instead of getting email that's like, oh, you jerks can't keep the website up, I get an email that says, really neato. Thanks for the great work. Whew. Okay, I kind of teared up a little bit there. So where are we? Well, let's see. We did the thing, the not thing, then five things. Oh, okay. We are at the grand finale, which is a three-parter. Everyone ready? Okay. So I'm going to end with the lazy way to do April Fool's pranks. Three ways of being very lazy and yet having very successful April Fool's pranks. So lazy technique number one. Use someone else's resources. Remember that Dance Dance authentication video? Like, that was a blog post and a YouTube video. Our blog site would not get overloaded. It's hosted someplace else. And if our video went so viral that it overloaded YouTube, like, that's not our problem. Okay. Lazy technique number two, take something that already exists and just describe it differently. You don't have to load test it because it already exists. So, for example, if you've ever posted a question on stackoverflow.com, you'll notice that there's a little checkbox. It looks something like this. And when you're asking the question, you can also click, yes, I'm going to answer this also. And about 5% of our questions, people check this box because they've learned something. They just want to share it with the world, which is fantastic. Now, you may have heard the term rubber ducky debugging. That's where the fact, if you explain a problem to someone, just the act of explaining it probably jogs your memory and you'll think of the answer yourself. And people say that that's why sometimes the best way to fix a problem is explain it to a coworker, and if a coworker isn't around, just explain it to a rubber ducky, and it's just as good. So my idea for an April Fool's prank would just be that if you check that box, like have a rubber ducky appear, or we would just claim that this is the brand new rubber ducky mode of Stack Overflow. Another thing you could do that's kind of related, this is my advice to, who programs in the Go language? Anyone here? Okay, so a very common thing in Go culture is, first you need to know, Go is a very minimalist language. What's great about it is it doesn't have certain features. But every time someone learns the Go language, it seems like they join the Go mailing list and say, oh, like, you know, I wish it had, like, you know, this feature and that feature and that feature, and they just don't get it. So my idea is, the Go team should announce Go 3.0. We've finally added all the features that newbies want, right? And, you know, it has generics and closures and just everything. And then say, in fact, not only will 3.0 have all these features, but we've already finished writing the code. It's ready to ship. And here's the link that lets you download Go 3.0. And when you click on that link, it takes you to this page. Now, the bad news is the Go team will never, ever, ever do this. And I'll tell you why. I have known Rob Pike since 1995. And in those 23 years, he has never laughed at a joke that I have made. The man has a very high bar for humor. He's on a first name basis with Penn and Teller. No joke. Like, he hangs out with them. And I know I might be a little funny, but I'm not Penn and Teller funny. So, okay. Let's move on. And number three, the lazy technique number three for April Fool's jokes is to just mislead your audience. For example, you could write a conference talk proposal that's about things you should always do when launching high-stake features, or actually really just the things you should do no matter what kind of feature you're launching, which would be summarizing the information in this fine, a chapter of this fine book, but at the last minute, changed the title of the talk to be Operational Excellence in April Fool's Pranks. That would be hilarious and would probably fool everyone. So thank you very much and enjoy the rest of the conference. Okay, so now we're going to give away this book. So the date I have picked is December 2nd. Who has the birthday closest to December 2nd? December 3rd? Can anyone beat that? Okay, all right, come on up.